Okay.
As we look for the Torah portion today is Maaseh Matot, Matot Maaseh. Always get that backwards. It is the final portion in Bamidbar, in Numbers, right? Which is really the end of the Torah, sort of. Right? This is, we're done with the story. Deuteronomy begins Moses' recap and Moses' exhortation to the people. Right? And that's all of Deuteronomy. If you've not had an opportunity to sit down and read Deuteronomy in one sitting, that's how it was written. It was Moses stands up and just sort of does it in front of the people. Right before we go into the land, right before he dies, all of that stuff. So if you haven't had a chance to sit down and read Deuteronomy that way, I would suggest you do. You know, it's not that long. Take an hour, hour and a half, something like that, and read through it. So we're finishing Numbers now, and we're finishing all of the things that are in the Torah itself as far as Hashem's commands and speakings through Moses to the children of Israel. So it's always interesting to have a look and see what is it that God finds so important that the climax is here, right? Right near the very end. So it's interesting that Matot, Parshat Matot, begins with an exposition, if you will, on Nedarim, on vows. And not just any vow. If you look, the vows that are discussed are very specific. It doesn't look that way. It looks like a very general thing. Okay, but we're not talking about vows between people. We've talked about that before. But here in Matot, we're talking about vows to God. So when you make a vow to God, not if you make a vow to God, when you make a vow to God. Okay? Now, we've talked about vows before in Numbers chapter 6. Very specific vows then, even more specific than this. What's the vows in Numbers chapter 6 that we're talking about?
Nazir,
right? The Nazirite vow. So it says, and again, it's basically it's saying, when you make a vow to God, okay, and then it's a vow there is really the vow, talking about the Nazirite vow. So here we're talking generally, including the Nazirite vow, but not only the Nazirite vow. When you make a vow to God, and it says specifically, if you're a man, you make a vow to God, just do it. Whatever it is that you vowed, you vowed. Just do it. Right? If you're going to make a vow to God, it should be so important that you don't even think twice about it. You just do it. And that's it. That's all it says about men. Now women, it starts to get interesting here. With women, it says if you're a woman in your father's household and you make a vow to God and your father overhears it, because any good father is always in the business of his daughter. Better be. And you don't like it. As her father, you have an opportunity to revoke the vow. To say, God, don't pay any attention to that one. Okay? But you got 24 hours. You got to do it immediately. You got 24 hours to do that. Okay? And so if you're not in your father's household, you're in your husband's household, which is really your household. You guys all know this. This is not a secret. Again, now your husband has the same opportunity. Within 24 hours, a husband can revoke the vow that you made. Okay? Again, we're talking about a vow to God. Why is this? Does this mean that women are subordinate to men? It's an interesting question. Perfect. It's a yes and no. Okay. When, what Rav Berkowitz meant is, and I'm putting words in your mouth, is that sometimes, but sometimes not. And the reason we know this is because this is talking about a very specific type of vow in a very specific circumstance. This does, there is no way to make a vast generalization that women are subordinate to men by looking at this text. What we're talking about is a specific instance with vows that a husband may eliminate the vow of a wife, or a father may eliminate the vow of a daughter if he does it in a very brief period of time. Now, what happens if that period of time goes by and then the father or husband releases the vow? Is the vow released? Yes, it is. It's released on her. The problem is it's thrown on the husband or the father because he's got the 24-hour penalty-free period of time. But if he does it after that, he takes on the vow. Are there certain circumstances when a husband or a father would want to do this? The answer is absolutely. Right? How many of us as fathers or husbands in certain circumstances would rather take the penalty than allow it to fall on our wife? Right? So we have the opportunity to do that. Okay? But back to the point here is not that the woman is subordinate to the man. It's that the man has the opportunity to release her from a vow. Why? Because there is a hierarchy in mitzvot. Not that a woman is less, but that the man is responsible. But that the man is responsible. Okay? Now, if you have daughters or children generally, we're not talking about kids. We're not talking about people who are under the age of 13 that say stuff. Right? Like the brothers say to each other, you know, I swear to God I'm gonna break your... No. This is not what we're talking about. We're talking about people that are of age of responsibility. Because otherwise it doesn't count. Okay, so if you're age of responsibility and you're a daughter in a household, okay, so you're 16 years old. And you make a vow to God. Usually about a boy. Right? And so as soon as the father hears about it, he goes, no. Okay, father should be able to do that. Right? And a husband should be able to do that for a wife. And it doesn't mean that he could boss her around, that she has to do everything he says. Now, interestingly, remember that Paul is a student of Gamaliel, one of the leading Rabbonim of the Mishnah. He was the first of the sages called Rabban, the first. And Paul was his student. So Paul knows all about Nadarim. Paul knows all about vows. There's a ton of oral law, the Mishnah, which hadn't been written down yet, but it was being passed orally. There's a ton about vows. Entire tractate. Paul knows all about this stuff. When Paul is talking about the relations of men and women, Is he really saying that women should be completely under men and everything, and they got to shut up and they're slaves? This is not what Paul is meaning. Paul is very much knowing what Torah is saying about vows here. He's very much knowing that men have a hierarchy of responsibility, not in everything, but specifically with vows. Specifically with vows. Okay? So if you're looking at Paul and saying that men should be able to boss women around and basically that they, you know, final say in everything, that's not what the Bible actually is talking about. That's not what Paul's talking about. Okay? Go ahead. The house is yours. Nest. Right? If I could have this little piece of my office without anything hanging on the walls, I will be very happy. Okay, and the rest of and the rest of it's yours. And you've got tons of stuff that you're supposed to do. Who takes challah? I don't take challah. Who lights candles? I don't like candles. You've got your own responsibilities. Okay? And the responsibilities that you have are your responsibilities. You guys are the leaders in the raising of the children. We're in there. We're part of it. But under your direction in the raising of children, this is the way it's structured. God made us this way. It's all right. And what Paul's saying is not taking anything away from that. Okay? So realistically, what this is setting up is specific roles for specific genders. I should say sexes. Gender is a grammar term. Right, yeah. You can't even say that nowadays, can you? I forgot all about that. What are there, 82 different genders now? Yes. There's two, right, yeah. Gender fluid. Viscous. Very viscous, like glass. Just two, okay. Okay, and that there's nothing more than that. It is important to understand the different roles of the different two different sexes. It's important to understand this. Okay? In Torah, there's 248 positive commandments, 365 negative commandments. And of these commandments, there's a whole bunch of them that are both time-related and positive. These are for men specifically, that we are commanded to do these things. Women are not. They're not commanded to do these things. We can talk about that during Kiddush lunch. Okay? Doesn't mean they can't do them. It means that it doesn't fulfill a mitzvah for them to do it. Why? Why do men have the responsibility, and why do men have the obligation to do more things in Torah than women? And the answer, the Chazal comes down to always, is because we need it. Okay? Zohar teaches us, Parashat Yitro, that women did not succumb to the temptation of the golden calf. That the gold had to be physically taken from them. They were not going to give up their gold. They were not going to give up their jewelry for the golden calf. And we're interpreting this nicely, right? Not just that women wouldn't give up their jewelry, which we all know is true, but that they wouldn't give up their jewelry specifically for the golden calf. And Torah teaches, it's in the Hebrew, that it had to be taken from them. Okay, the women are on spiritually a higher plane than men are. And so men need much more constant reminders to follow God. Rav Arya Kaplan does a wonderful treatise on tzitzit, on a talit katan in particular. Right? Men wear a talit katan. Women don't have to wear a talit katan. Right? In fact, it's forbidden for women to wear a talit katan. Again, we can get into that in Kiddush lunch. Okay? So what Rav Kaplan says, what does this do? This is such a huge reminder. Men have it all the time. They have it all the time. What do we wear this for? Why? So that we will see the tzitzit and remember all of God's commandments. Okay, for a guy to commit adultery, he's got to take off his talit katan, or at least see it. Okay, there is no question that this is a barrier to sexual sin. There's no question. Do women need it? Not as much. Not as much. Right? Which is a vast generalization. Some women need reminders not to commit. So, we won't get into that. Okay? But as a generality, men think about sex a lot. You know, from the time you're 12 until you're 120. Doesn't go away. Yes, you should. All right? And so this helps us. Do we think about God enough? No. Talit. Minyan. Why do we have a minyan? One of the results of having to have a minyan is you got 10 men together. When you start counting women for a minyan, what happens to a congregation? We've seen this in Reform synagogues throughout the United States over the last 30, 40 years. Men stop coming. It's happening in the Catholic Church, it's happening in the Evangelical Christian, and it's happening in Reform Judaism. Where doesn't it happen? Orthodox Judaism. Okay? Now, it's a separate sad story, but Pew Research polls from 1970 and then 2012 show that in 1970 there were about 3.2 million regular synagogue attending Reform Jews in America. 3.2 million. In 2012, the number's down to 850,000. Okay, and 70% of those are intermarrying, of the attenders. Okay, in 1970, there were roughly 850,000 Orthodox regular synagogue attenders in America. In 2012, there's about 850,000 Orthodox regular synagogue attendees in America. So the number didn't go up and didn't go down. Okay, but because Reform Jewish attendance has dropped off this much, it's about equal now, Orthodox and Reform, as far as people that actually attend synagogue. Right? What's happening? Oh, your bar mitzvah age. We'll drop you off at synagogue. And this happens way, way too much. It's a huge problem. Okay. So in Messianic circles, most of the congregations in the country have a vast majority of women. Why is this? My opinion, which is always right, by the way. Be quiet. It's because the men are not given the authority for their role, and they're not given the responsibility for their role. You have a responsibility as a man, and you have authority as a man, you got to take it. Right? Just as if you're a woman, you have both authority and responsibility. It's just different responsibilities and a different authority. Do you have the authority to tell your husband no on anything? You bet. You do. Okay? Does your husband have the right to tell you no on some things? On some things. Not everything. Okay? So really, this look at vows as sort of a culmination of a lot of the looks at mitzvot in the Torah as we near the ending of Torah really gives us a clarification about the different roles that we have. That in certain instances, we each have a different role. Okay? I'll finish up with this. Rav Berkowitz here is a Levi. I am not a Levi. Okay? He has certain authority and certain responsibilities because he's a Levi.
We carry things.
You carry things. And you do it so well. Okay? It would be ridiculous of me to be jealous because he's a Levi. It would be insanely stupid to say, I am just as good as him. I should have that authority and those responsibilities also. I should be able to do all of that because I'm his equal. A, of course I'm his equal. And B, that has nothing to do with it. Right? Men and women are equal. We are not equivalent. We're different. And we have different responsibilities and different authorities. Shabbat shalom.